This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
The compulsion to do better touches us all, as do the roadblocks that impede our betterment, fatigue, inadequate resources, and our own unavoidable imperfections. Yet there is perhaps no other field where improvement is more important than in medicine, where the difference between saving or losing a life is in the smallest of details. Dr. Atul Gawande is a MacArthur Fellow, a general surgeon at the Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, a staff writer for the New Yorker magazine, and an associate professor at Harvard Medical School and the Harvard School of Public Health. His new book is Better, A Surgeon's Notes on Performance. It's an honor to welcome him to the program. Good afternoon, sir.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Been looking forward to talking to you. What a great book. Let's start, if we can, with just, Dr. Gawande 101. Tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're from and your background.
Well, my family is Indian originally, but I grew up in Ohio. Both of my parents are doctors, and I was sort of steeped in medicine from, you know, coming with my father to the emergency room when he'd be called away in the middle of our being out at a restaurant. And so I grew up around medicine, ended up in it myself as a surgeon, but along the way have been puzzling over and grappling with how we understand our own failures in medicine, why we fail, why we succeed, how I get to be good at what I do, and then trying to write about it, which has become an increasing part of what I've been doing. I've been now a staff writer for The New Yorker for the last 10 years.
What a thrill and an honor in itself to be able to contribute to that magazine.
No, it's extremely lucky. I give a lot of credit to David Remnick, the editor who brought me on and was willing to see in the kind of stories I could tell out of school, from the operating room, from watching my colleagues and what they do, and from talking to patients in detail about their lives, that there was something that was worthwhile to them at The New Yorker, and I was glad that they've been willing to keep it going.
My guest is best-selling author Dr. Atul Gawande, and the new book is Better, A Surgeon's Notes on Performance. So tell us, what's the book about?
So this is a series of stories on one level, just stories of life and death and sometimes the unexpected. But they are tales that help us try to unpack why it is that medicine fails so often, and then tries to understand, you know, who are the people who are actually searching for cures for failure? Who are the people who have found ways to get better results out of all of our complexities and our imperfections than other people? And so I show stories that come from everything from just the mundane of how do we make sure just people wash their hands when they're supposed to.
Tell us about that, because that is a fascinating story. Hand washing in medicine.
Right. You know, here I am. I've come out of my 8 years of training as a surgeon, and I look around, and what is it that that is the single most common reason that my patients have a problem? It's infections. And we have 2 million infections a year that people pick up in hospitals. 90,000 people die from infections in hospitals, and the vast majority of them could be prevented if we'd be better about washing our hands. And the puzzle to me coming out of my training is, so why can't we get this right? I mean, here I can make incredibly complex operations happen under the microscope, and yet we can't stop people from passing infections to our patients. The answers turn out to be something that's more complicated than just laziness in medicine, though, you know, undoubtedly there's a certain amount of that. The deeper problem is that if you watch a nurse during their work, they're seeing 4, 5, 6 patients. They have to go in and out of their room 30 or 40 times in an hour, and every time they're supposed to wash their hands. But if you have to wash your hands properly, you're going to do it for 30 to 60 seconds. And that means that they'd spend at least half of their shift just washing their hands and not treating the patients. So what do? They end up cutting corners because they just have to get the work done. And so that's the setup. They are set up to fail. They're not set up to succeed at this even mundane thing. And so I looked at a hospital that actually got rid of infections in Pittsburgh. It's a Pittsburgh Veterans Hospital. And they did it by measuring how often they failed and then asking on every floor, what do people think we need to do to make it possible for you to do your job in a way that lets you always wash your hands? And it transformed their care to the point that they got their infection rate down to zero.
And what did they do?
Well, the very interesting thing was it was sometimes the mundanest ideas that came from just ordinary people. They'd say, you know, you have, let's put alcohol rub dispensers because it takes only 15 seconds, and let's make sure we have them outside every door in every room.
Like a little Purell, like hand salve type of thing?
Yeah, and make sure that we have it everywhere. And, you know, it's amazing. Europe has had those for 20 years, and we've only begun putting them in hospitals in the last 5 years or so. The second thing was they said, you know, on this floor, the patients all end up needing dressings for their wounds, like gauze and things like that. And I have to go in and out of the rooms to get it. And every time, you know, I end up potentially having to see another patient and wash my hands, and I'll miss it. So they stocked the individual rooms rather than putting everything out on a cart. They found they would run out of gowns at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, so they had to make sure they stocked them. It's all that kind of just supply and making sure that things are organized the right way. It's engineering things to make them successful. And that sense that you could learn from the people on the floor, in the day-to-day interaction, what they need to do for success is very different from our usual way of thinking about solving problems in medicine. The usual way is you go to a laboratory somewhere, you cook up something that costs a lot of money, someone makes some profit on it, and you go out and market the hell out of it with ads on TV. That is not the way that in the real world you can actually make sure that people are just doing what we already know how to do.
My guest is best-selling author and New Yorker staff writer Atul Gawande. He is a MacArthur Fellow and a general surgeon at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. His new book is Better, A Surgeon's Notes on Performance. Tell us what you learned about what's going on in Iraq with the care and the treatment of wounded soldiers.
The story of what is going on with the care of wounded soldiers is actually really important for our care back home here. Because, you know, we are easily frustrated by the idea that how do you change this gargantuan health system in ways that can get better results out of it? Well, in Iraq, they did it under much more dire conditions. The surgeons are understaffed, they're sometimes short on resources, and they're not even necessarily people who know a lot about trauma when they go in. In the first Persian Gulf War 15 years ago, the death rates for soldiers wounded in the battlefield was around 25%. In this war, the teams have lowered the death rate to under 10%. It's historic.
You know,
these are people being blown up by bombs, shot by bullets, and they're saving more of them there than they would save in a city hospital here in the United States. And the question was, how are they doing that? The way they're doing it is not with any new technology. There's nothing new we've discovered in the last 15 years about how to save people who are blown up by bombs. Instead, every week they look at their results. They ask, how many lived? How many died? And of those who died, why did they die? What could we have done differently to save them, to have saved them? And they have learned all kinds of interesting lessons. For example, early on they discovered that some of the soldiers were dying because they weren't transporting them quickly enough to the hospitals to be operated on, and they die on the way. So they move the surgeons into battlefield tents. You know, they were already in MASH units to begin with, like you recognize from TV.
Right.
These were taking them and putting them in a couple Humvees with 5 backpacks with everything that they need and then just doing surgery out in tents. And the surgeons actually objected, saying, how can I do this? I don't even have an X-ray machine out here. But they went back to 19th century techniques, finding the fractures by feel, and by getting to the soldiers faster, they saved more lives, and they knew it because they were measuring themselves. They discovered that they needed to do different things to make sure that the soldiers wore their Kevlar because the soldiers weren't wearing it. They found dozens of things they could do, and they're continuing to find because 4 years into this war, they're still tracking and learning and trying to figure out how they save more lives. And by doing that, they have the best save rate in history. We have nothing like that here. You could not go into an American hospital. You can't go to my hospital and ask, how many folks have you saved and how many have you lost in the last 6 months? We really couldn't tell you because we're not used to asking that question. And we certainly, you know, aren't able to answer, are you saving more lives this year than you did last year? Are you doing better this year than last year? And that's what we're missing, is that same kind of lesson coming out of Iraq about how they could save so many lives. We could do that here.
I was going to say, at the very core of this, it seems to be some really sincere self-analysis and best practices that we don't, that hospitals and certainly, you know, our local and state and national governments don't seem to be doing, that we just don't seem to be, as a people, willing to stop and ask tough questions about our own performance.
Yeah, it's partly because it's really hard. I mean, you know, I'm in practice 4 years. Am I at the very best, at the top of the bell curve in what I do? I'm kind of afraid to find out. I honestly don't know. I couldn't tell you. Am I average or am I the best? I think I'm one of the best, but until you gather the information, you don't know, and then you don't have a target to see what you could do to get better. But it's also a reflection of how much medicine and science and society has changed. For most of human history, we as human beings were governed, our lives were governed by ignorance. That is, we just didn't know what to do to take care of people. If you had a heart attack, we didn't know how we might have prevented it, and we didn't know what we could do to make it so you could survive it. Today, we know lots of things we can do to prevent heart disease and heart attacks. And then we know if you have a heart attack that there are probably 100 things we need to make go right, one right after the other, for you to live and survive. And we have not come to grips with the idea that now it's not just new discoveries. We, you know, investing in the discovery of new cures is important, but we've discovered a ton where we can treat almost any diagnosis that people come to us with. But we are not necessarily delivering on what the science already shows can be done for people. And so we have to look at these stories of the pockets where we've seen success. It almost always comes with a couple patterns. People are measuring themselves, and then there's freedom for ingenuity to drive new and better results.
The book is Better, A Surgeon's Notes on Performance. Best-selling author Dr. Atul Gawande joins us on Charlottesville right now. Tell us what you learned about the doctors who assist in capital punishment, in executions, doctors who are literally brought in to help kill people.
Yes. It might seem strange in a book like this that you would come to talking to those kinds of doctors, but I did, because one of the things that you realize in medicine is that you can have technical success, but what does it mean to have moral success? And I, you know, the ethics of medicine are that you do not participate in executions because our job is to heal, not to kill. But no executions in the country would really be feasible without medical personnel helping to make sure that, now that we depend on lethal injection, making sure that it can be done and carrying it out. And so it happens, you know, in the shadows, so to speak. The doctors are anonymous. They don't talk to anybody. They don't tell people what they've been up to. But I was able to track down four doctors, one nurse, who have been involved in and in most cases continue to be involved in helping execute people. And I wanted to ask them, why do they do this? And whether there's a strong or justifiable reason for it. The interesting thing was to see how people in the real world make moral decisions. Nearly all of them had no plan. They're not zealots for killing people. They simply were working in prisons, helping with blood pressures and diabetes, and one day the warden would come up to them and say, hey, we got to do an execution. Would you help with that? And when they answered that question, a couple of them that I talked to didn't even realize they were being asked a moral question and simply went along and did it as if it was, you know, like doing an operation for anybody else. And that got them into troubling situations over time. The most interesting person, though, was a Georgia physician who was against the death penalty but participated in executions because he saw his role as being someone there to help prevent suffering for someone who is suffering from a terminal disease. They didn't have a cancer in this case. They had a terminal court order that he could do nothing about, and he felt it was his moral job to help make them not suffer if they have to die.
Interesting.
It's a. I ended up disagreeing with him in a certain way, but I also came out very much admiring the way he thought through the problem morally.
Best-selling author Atul Gawande, his book is Better, A Surgeon's Notes on Performance, and we'll be giving away a free copy here in just a few moments. Tell us if you can, I know you've been involved in public policy and on healthcare issues before. What is it you think we should be doing as a nation with the healthcare crisis that we face? And it certainly is, it's a huge issue now on all the campaigns. Everybody is listing healthcare as among the most important issues that they're running on.
Yeah, you know, part of it is that I don't think we've really been clear to ourselves on what the problem is here. It is a crisis, but it's one of those slow-boiling crises where, you know, the system's not going to collapse tomorrow, but it is slowly killing us. The biggest reason Chrysler had to be sold for less than the value of the Cheesecake Factory, the reason that GM may still yet go bankrupt is because their healthcare costs are more than they can handle for their aging workforce, and it's making us as a country uncompetitive. We can't compete. We can't sell against a world where Toyota has a tenth of the healthcare costs that the older companies have. And, of course, we have 15% of our population which simply doesn't get basic kinds of care because they have no insurance. So for us to solve this problem is really to try to solve a fundamental economic problem for us, a major middle-class problem, because more and more people are having to pay larger and larger portions of their health benefits. And to make it go well, what we also have to understand is there is no one answer. There is not the perfect healthcare plan. Every healthcare plan is a trade-off between the costs that we are going to be willing to pay into it and the desire to have some security so that both businesses and individuals can be protected. So I think the bottom line answer here is, whoever becomes the president, we are going to need to have a plan that the majority of the country can come behind to cover everybody, and to make it so that businesses and individuals are protected against runaway costs, which will mean some increased government spending to protect against the costs, and to try to make sure we have a good safety net for people who don't have good coverage.
Best-selling author Atul Gawande is a MacArthur Fellow, a general surgeon at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, and a staff writer at The New Yorker. His new book is Better, A Surgeon's Notes on Performance. It's been an honor to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's great to be on, and thank you for all the wide-ranging questions.
This interview will be archived in its entirety on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, CVillePodcast.com.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit CVillePodcast.com for more.